Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is a Friday. I cannot remember the last time we had this many great topics live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. She's doing something cool to her hair this week. I think it looks very good on television. So this going forward is really... This is your Michael Jordan mid-range jumper look.
Oh.
This is the
So it's the all-time best.
I know nothing about fashion and cool, but I know it when I spot it. Like, I'm not funny, but I know it when I spot it.
Thank you, Colin.
So look at Joy Taylor this week. You have come roaring back on television.
Listen, we were getting back in studio. We don't have hair and makeup, so.
You did no exhibition season. She came out and threw for 4 touchdowns, first game back. It's great to have you. This week, today, it's an incredible day for topics.
There's a lot going on.
There is a ton going on. So start about this. Joy and I talk about this. One of the things that drives me nuts, and I joke with my kids, whenever they're a victim, I'm like, whoa, talk to the hand. We have granite countertops. There's no victims here. Dad can be mean some days. But there's no victims in this family. Okay, there's real victims all over the world. No one here but victimhood. Just because you didn't get this when you wanted it or that when you wanted it. So I'm not a big fan of the victim card, but there are real victims. The New Orleans Saints are not one of them. So James Harrison's story came out yesterday. James Harrison's talking to Barstool Sports, came out and said, yeah, 10 years ago, I lit this guy up for the Cleveland Browns, knocked him out of a game, and after the game, Mike Tomlin gave me an envelope. And I'm not going to tell you what was in the envelope, and I doubt it was Mike Tomlin with a thank you card for the big hit. Have a nice weekend. Don't be a litter bug. Doubt it was that. It was probably cash. Anyway, that's what James Harrison claimed. Well, the New Orleans Saints, who were part of that bounty gate, Sean Payton was suspended. They were fined. Well, here come the Saints. You know, it's 2020. That was... Sean Payton was suspended 8 years ago. I thought we were all over it. But the Saints, once again, the world's out to get us. Here's Sean Payton, a guy I like.
If people are waiting for the league to investigate that, they shouldn't hold their breath. I would be shocked. That'll be something that's tucked away or under the rug at Park Avenue. They'll look into it briefly. Don't get me started on that.
Get you back in the doghouse, Coach.
In salary. You know, honestly, something I'll never truly get over because I know how it was handled and how it was run and the reasons behind it. And that's just the truth.
Oh, Lord. First of all, James Harrison thing happened 10 years ago. We just found out about it. Statute of limitations, maybe. James is out of the league. Okay. Mike Tomlin shouldn't say anything. It's over. The bounty gate was different. The NFL found out about it either while it was still going on or it just happened and the players were all still in the league and Peyton was, you know, one of the stars, celebrity coaches in the league at the time. And so the NFL, increased concern about safety, found out in the moment or close to the moment, players still in the league and said, yeah, suspensions, fines, the like. Okay, big difference between something happens and you discover it 10 years ago. And I'll get to the pandemic part of this, and I discovered it now. Now, the Saints can say, well, we weren't the only ones doing it. A lot of bank robbers don't get caught. The ones who do get in big trouble. It's called the speed limit. Everybody goes over it. You ever gone to a cop and say, you know, the guy going next to me was going much faster? They're not interested. You roll the dice in life if you're going to cheat on your taxes, you're going to rob a bank, you're going to do bounties. You may not be the only person doing it, but if you get caught, you're in big trouble. The Saints got caught. The NFL, there's this thing about New Orleans that they think the league is after them. Why in the world would the NFL not love the Saints? They play Super Bowls there. They have maybe the most creative offensive coach. They have an incredibly likable Hall of Fame quarterback. Post-Katrina, there is a resilience to the city I think we all admire. People love New Orleans. Now, the New Orleans NBA franchise nobody cares about. New Orleans and Green Bay are the two, and this is why the NBA, NFL is king, small markets thrive. The Packers and the Saints are two of the top 7 or 8 brands in the league. in tiny cities. Everybody likes New Orleans. It's America's party city. You go, you eat oysters, you party, you throw up, they clean it up, nobody knows, you come back home and do your job at work. Everybody likes New Orleans. Nobody's picking on New Orleans. The NFL last year, did the single dopiest thing I've seen perhaps in 20, 30 years. They created a pass interference replay. It was so ridiculous, so reactionary, that officials silently protested it. Replay officials, real officials, GMs, people protested it. But the NFL felt some need to take care of New Orleans. And it's like, okay, they kind of got jobbed. No, they didn't, by the way. The game went to overtime, and they blew it twice. Their offense blew it, and their defense blew it in overtime. Yeah, it was a bad call. It happens. It happens all the time. College football, pro football, Ohio State fans are still yelling about a call against Clemson. It's sports. Brian Russell of the Jazz still thinks MJ pushed him. It's sports. They're bad calls, bad throws, bad tackles, bad everything, bad coaching. But here's another thing. New Orleans is built on restaurants, tourism, and hotels. Let me ask you, New Orleans. During this pandemic, are you worried about something that happened 10 years ago? Or are you trying to survive and keep your restaurant, your hotel working today? We know the answer. It's the latter, like everywhere else in America. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Yeah, the NFL's not going to go back and worry about something 10 years ago. They're trying to get a season. They have 1,700 players. They're trying to take care of them. They cannot afford not to have a season. So if the NFL doesn't consume itself or concern itself with what happened 10 years ago, yeah, there's sort of something going on that we're all paying attention to, especially in places like Nevada and Miami and New Orleans that deal a huge part of their economy is tourism. And right now, nobody wants to get in an airplane. So, yes, the NFL's worried about now, not 10 years ago, nor should they be. This idea is becoming so almost laughable now that the NFL's out to get New Orleans. Everybody likes New Orleans. Who doesn't like New Orleans? Who doesn't like the Saints? I mean, outside of a rival in division, they mostly don't like the Saints because the Saints beat them. Everybody likes New Orleans. The NFL likes New Orleans. And stop. Enough. Bounty gate, you got caught. You rob banks, you get caught, you get tagged. It's the way it works. Now, let me now shift gears to something. I'm going to go in a different direction than what I'm hearing from everybody else on this. People are ripping Blake Snell. He's a baseball player. And they're ripping Blake Snell. And they're saying, Blake Snell, all he cares about is money, 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 money. And I do admit the optics of talking about money gets really ugly. I said it. I admit it. But I thought about this in the last couple of days. So here's Blake Snell talking about, you want me to take pay cut after pay cut after pay cut. I'm not doing it.
Y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid because the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to defend him. The optics aren't good, but let's not worry about optics during a virus. Let's worry about like data and science and stuff, not how stuff lands on Twitter. Let me defend Blake Snell, who's a really good player. Who's taking the risk in all these sports? The athlete. Okay? In unique times, you have to have unique positions and strategies. Generally in my life, I have often supported owners. I've been part of businesses in my life. I have some ownership in this show. You know, I see the owner's side, the capital, the risk. Who's taking the risk? It's not the players. It's not the billionaires. This is the one time in my life I'm going to go for the players on this in all sports. A, they're taking the physical risk. B, they're leaving their families. In the NBA, they're going to have to play thousands of miles from their families. Grandmas, grandpas, family. They don't know what's going on. They don't know what's going on with their family. They're not there to support them. They can't fly back. And the third thing is, if the players say no, owners have no leverage. Owners could not say today, you have to play. Absolutely not. This is an agreement between everybody. And I hear this all the time. Well, I mean, owners are going to lose billions. Okay. There's a reason people don't sell baseball teams very often. Frank McCourt was forced to sell it. Okay. Let's take the Dodgers, because I'm in Los Angeles. The Dodgers were purchased 8 years ago for $2 billion. At the time, you may recall, that is ridiculous. And they're not even worth half that. 8 years later, they're worth $3.3 billion. I'm going to do some quick math. Actually, I did it 2 hours ago. $1.3 billion of growth in 8 years. The Dodgers' equity grows $162 million a year. Players never get part of that. And by the way, because of the instability in the stock markets around the world, because of the instability of the housing markets, where are the world's wealthy investing? Pro sports franchises. They're growing and growing and growing and growing, and the players don't get any. They just get a salary. And I know business guys are saying, hey, Cowherd, the owners take the risk. So I want to stay with that word risk for a second, because capitalists love the word risk. I am risking the big money. All right, we'll use that word you love to just throw at players all the time. Risk. On your private jet, everybody masks and gloves. Four people. What's the risk in the billionaire's suite? What's the risk in your castle / mansion? There is none. The risk, the word you love to use, operative word here, is all on the players. NBA players, hockey players, soccer players, baseball players. Owners, give one to the players. This is the year. You're going to make $100 million. When LeBron went to Cleveland, Dan Gilbert made $500 million equity of his franchise in an hour. Players don't get part of that. They don't get part of any of that. They get a salary and taxed. Yeah, like Steph Curry pays a higher tax rate in California than I do. Why? Because I can file as a business owner. He's an employee. That's why guys like LeBron have businesses on the side so they can at least shelter or, you know, manipulate like owners can do some of their shoe business and some of their movie business and some of their TV business. I'm not anti-owner. I'm often pro-owner. But this is the year I will overwhelmingly side with players because of that word owners always love to use. I'm taking the risk. This year, none of it. It's all on the athletes.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Aaron Rodgers is holding a press conference the minute our show ends. Yeah, I'm sure it's a coincidence. And it's the first time he's talked since the Packers drafted Jordan Love. I, of course, am one of the only American, well, I'm America's media icon, so why not? One of the few people that have gone after Aaron Rodgers because I think at times he can be a tad condescending. I think he's a great talent, not always a great leader. And I think I've been backed by many sources on that, public, private, both, through the years. But I do think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and super talented, and I love watching him play. And he's always welcome on the couch and yell and scream at me if he wants. I don't care. He's an unbelievable talent. But he holds a press conference today, and what I want is authentic. I know he'll be smart. That I never worry about that. And he'll be thoughtful. But I want authentic, because you can be both authentic and smart and a great leader and a great teammate. And so Joy Taylor is going to be the reporter, do a press conference sound effects. I would generally wear a mustache, but during the virus, all those closets are closed here. The props guy is not here. Our props guys are not allowed in the building. So are you ready, John? Let's make it sound like a press conference. I am Aaron Rodgers.
It's like pumping in a crowd noise.
Which we're going to do, I heard, yeah.
All right. Joy Taylor, FS1, Aaron, what was your first reaction to the Packers drafting Jordan Love?
Well, I mean, I had read the stories and reports that they may do that. So they drafted me when we had Brett Favre. I mean, this is what enterprises do. You know, they make sure they're protected for the future. So he's supposed to be really, really talented. I don't watch a lot of Utah State football games. I went on to YouTube. He's big, strong, and but this is what organizations do. I mean, I think, you know, when Tom Brady was a quarterback for the Patriots, they drafted quarterbacks every other year. This is the reality of it.
Have you talked to Jordan yet?
I texted him a couple of times, and, you know, he texted me back. Yeah.
Carol, Kenosha News, did you get a heads up that they were drafting a quarterback in the first round?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's what teams do, and I don't think teams should ask players. I'm not a scout. I don't. On Saturday nights, I'm preparing for an NFL game. I'm not watching college football. I'm trying to beat the Bears or the Vikings or the Lions. So I don't know why you'd ask a player's opinion on a draft. Unless, you know, I went to Cal. Maybe it's a Cal player, and maybe I know him. But I don't think that's a responsibility of a team. I'm not supposed to be a scout. We have those. We have a huge department of scouts.
Will you be a better mentor than Brett Favre?
I think that's overplayed by the media. Brett Favre's job was to win games. My job was to take Brett Favre's job. I mean, that's what we're doing in this thing. Like, there's only one quarterback. We have four receivers playing, six on the roster. You know, we have 12, 13 offensive linemen. You got two quarterbacks. One wants the starter's job, and the starter's job is to win the Super Bowl. So that was not – and Brett Favre, anytime I asked Brett Favre a question, Brett Favre always gave me an answer. He never once hid any information, but his job – you know, his job was to win games. My job was to get his job. So that relationship going in, we're all grown-ups here. We know what it is.
Bill from the Sheboygan Press. How you doing, Aaron?
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with Matt LaFleur currently?
Well, I mean, we won 13 games. It was bad. We wouldn't win 13 games. I mean, it was new, to be honest with you. It's a good question, Bob. Or Sue, I forgot.
Bill.
Sorry, Bill.
Sorry.
You dress better than any sportscaster in the history of sports writer in the history of Milwaukee, by the way. you know, we just met each other. I didn't know him. He didn't know me. So I think if you can win 13 games in the first year of a relationship, it's pretty amazing. I mean, if you go back, and you guys, this is what you guys do and gals do for a living, right? Like, if you go back and look at first year coach relationship with a team, how many have won 13 games in a tough division? I mean, Vikings. Really, really good team. So I think a relationship's good.
How did you feel about them not drafting a wide receiver?
Well, Devontae Adams is a star, and most quarterbacks in this league don't have Devontae Adams. I mean, I can lobby for another wide receiver, but if you watch this play San Francisco, we struggled in protection. So we drafted a blocking tight end, that's what I've heard, and a bunch of interior offensive linemen, and a tough, hard-nosed running back. So if you watch this play San Francisco, were our receivers the issue or San Francisco's defensive line the issue? So I think the team addressed what they viewed as a primary concern. I would have loved another receiver. I mean, fishermen want more fish, right? Like, I hope we draft four receivers every draft. That's what quarterbacks want.
Frank, Green Bay Press Gazette. How you doing, Aaron?
Hi, Frank. How are you?
Hope you well. How do you feel about Brady joining the NFC?
Well, I heard he's playing a golf event with Peyton, so yes. I think I can beat him in golf, and I can't wait to beat him during the season. I think it's kind of great. I mean, like, you see NBA guys moving around all the time. I think it's great to have, you know, maybe the greatest player in our league go to another franchise. I mean, I'll be watching. I mean, if they're on TV and I'm not playing, I'll be watching, Tom.
Daryl, Beloit Daily News.
Daryl, hi, Daryl.
Is your team good enough to win a Super Bowl?
Excuse me, sir?
Is the team good enough to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it was broadcast. We got to the NFC Championship. I mean, we lost to a great team that led in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. I mean, it was on television. And by the way, we got a bunch of tough physical players. I think Matt and I are in a second year. I mean, this organization, we don't lose a lot of games here. You know, we get to the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, once you're into the playoffs, especially you're in the playoffs and you get a bye or a home field advantage, absolutely we're a Super Bowl contender.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Frank.
Daryl.
Sorry, Bill. Okay. Authentic, honest. I don't think he was dishonest with any of that.
It actually had a very Aaron-like tone. I think you really embodied the spirit of Aaron Rodgers there.
Could one of you, Green Bay people, send this to Aaron? And because, you know, He doesn't watch the show. Right. I thought all the answers. That's if he did that today, you'd be like, cool. There's the answer.
Ideally, he should throw a wet blanket on the situation. Yes.
Hey, listen, man, I heard about Jordan Love. I read the paper. I saw the stories. I was Jordan Love. Brett probably wasn't tickled by it, but this is an enterprise. It's a company. And this is what companies do.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Lincoln Riley yesterday kind of pushed back on this whole, you know, camp starts June 1st, college football. He went, whoa, 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 slow down.
All this talk of these schools wanting to bring players back on June 1st is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. But I do believe if we do it right and we don't get ahead of ourselves that we will be able to play a season. You know, in my opinion, we need to bring them in as late as we possibly can. Every day early that we bring them in is a day we could have gotten better. It's a day we could have learned more about the virus. It's a day PPE maybe gets better. It's a day closer to a vaccine. It's a day that our testing equipment and testing capabilities get better, and it's just not worth it.
So it's interesting. Last night I talked for about 30 minutes with a friend of mine. He is on the board of a Los Angeles hospital. So he's been on the board for a long, long time. And we talked about the virus. And one of the things he said is, nobody should get it. Nobody wants to get it. But if you got it today, you'd be safer than if you got it 2 months ago because we're learning so much about this virus. And if you got it a month from now, you'd probably be better off than if you got it today. Meaning, to Lincoln Riley's point, time equals knowledge. On my Saturday podcast, I do one of those. We're going to have Dr. Patrick Shong, a surgeon, a billionaire, a doctor who became a billionaire. He's working on a vaccine. He bought an L.A. hospital. He bought the L.A. Times, part owner of the Lakers, one of the smartest people in Los Angeles. And on the podcast, he's smarter than me or anybody that's probably watching the show. He's learning every couple of weeks. The point being, don't rush. The second thing that Lincoln Riley is spot on, you can get one shot at this. This is not pro sports. Okay, this is not pro sports. It's 85 players, college campuses. We're not going to have a start, stop. These schools are worried about lawsuits. It's either safe or it's not. If you come out and don't have your act together and there's things about this virus we don't know and you got to stop for 3 weeks, they're not going to start it back up. So you better have every ounce of information on it. Now, the good news is our doctor told me, Patrick Shong, warm weather helps fight the virus. They do now believe that's helping perhaps California and Florida, especially Georgia, with the virus. That warm weather does appear to absolutely help. And so that's good news for people that are going to be practicing in July and August. But there's no hurry. And the other thing is, it just simply, there's no reason to start June 1st. It doesn't take that long to get college kids ready to play. This is Urban Meyer on my show recently.
I've actually had some conversations, and the number that keeps coming up is 6 weeks. You know, football, you have safety issues involved, and 6 weeks, which puts you around that July 16th number that gives you time to get a team ready. And that's the conditioning. That's the, you know, football is such a complex game. But the most important thing is the health and safety. A lot of these places, majority of them, are going to, you know, deal with 80, 90 degree heat. To get those kids used to running, they have to be on the move. 6 weeks out is kind of a number that we've come up with.
That means you could start as late as July 15th. 6 weeks of knowledge later than June 1st. You could start July 15th, 16th, and make it if you're playing Labor Day. For the record, not everybody even plays Labor Day. Not everybody does. So there you go. Let me shift to this. You know, you don't hear a ton about Michael Jordan's kids. The Last Dance episodes 9 and 10 are Sunday. But I just loved this interview. I strongly encourage you to go out and read the interview between Jasmine Jordan, Michael Jordan's 27-year-old daughter, and the Associated Press. It's really good. Fascinating to hear her talk about her dad, who's very doting. You know, like all dads, Michael's a cream puff around the kids. He doesn't treat his kids like Isaiah Thomas. He babies them, he coddles them. He, you know, he's a dad. And One of the things she says, Jasmine says, and I'm going to read this. She called him silly putty. That's how she calls him. She said, it definitely surprises me because my dad is very private. He doesn't like to comment on social matters. He doesn't like to respond to things when people want him to. He definitely likes to move methodically on his terms and on his time. And as I'm watching this unfold, and he's emotional, he's sharing this incredible insight and perspective. It's just been incredible to see, because she was a little girl during all of this, so she doesn't remember it. So she's texting her dad, and she's fascinated with her dad. And one of the things about Michael Jordan, I've always said, and I think about this all the time, what if Michael and LeBron would have played simultaneously? It would have been so fascinating. And that's just not the way it ever works, right? You never get Jack Nicklaus and Tiger in their prime. It just, for some reason in sports, it just never works that way. And maybe it's good for sports that you got Michael years and then it gets exhausted. And then we get the LeBron years. And maybe the leagues love this, that you don't have your greatest all playing in one time. Magic and Bird is about as close as it gets in sports. But Michael is the opposite of LeBron. Michael's mostly been hiding since he retired. He turned down a $100 million personal appearance. He turned it down. He's private. Michael hides. I know people that know Michael. He doesn't want to talk. I mean, he'll own a team or be a GM, but he just doesn't do stuff. That's why this documentary is so special. Like, Michael's hiding. He reminds me a little bit of Johnny Carson. Now, for those in your 20s and 30s, you don't understand how enormously important Johnny Carson was. Johnny Carson ran Los Angeles. Not a movie star, Johnny Carson ran Los Angeles. If you had a movie, you went on Johnny's show. If you had a TV show, you went on Johnny's show. If you were a comedian, you went on Johnny's show. When Johnny died, think about this. When Johnny Carson died decades ago, he left $426 million to a children's hospital. You know how much money that is today for a talk show host? For a talk show host. When Johnny retired, it was over. It was done. He played tennis, hung out with a small group of friends. That's what Michael does. That's what Michael does. You don't see him publicly. There's a certain dignity to Michael Jordan that he's not schlepping for every dollar. He's not schlepping for every appearance. He's not schlepping. He turned down $100 million. This is not a knock on LeBron. LeBron's just more social. LeBron's still playing. But one of the things I really appreciate about Michael Jordan, not everybody that's a public figure wants to be. He is a private person with a public life. Now LeBron is a public person in a public life. That's great. Magic Johnson, very much a public person, a public life. Larry Bird was a private guy in a public life. And I think more and more as I watch this, and when I read his daughter Jasmine, I'd love to get her on the show, by the way. I think the interview is just fantastic. She's fascinated watching all this. And Michael, when you read this story, he didn't care about a lot of things. He cared about winning at basketball. He cares about his kids. And obviously, he likes winning in business. And that's it. In fact, I look at golf, and I'm like, of course he likes golf. It's exclusive and private. He can go out behind a gate to a private country club, pick two or three guys, do what he wants. It doesn't have to come out. Nobody invades his space. Of course, Michael Jordan loves golf. He can get away from it all. Fascinating stuff. Look it up. Associated Press interviewing Jasmine Jordan. She would be a great guest on the show. Fascinating. All right. Andrew Whitworth around the corner. Has Aaron Rodgers moved up that press conference yet? Does he have the courage to do that so I can comment on it? Goulet, try to stay on that.
I'm not going to lie. When I saw the story this morning and I saw what time
right after our show
was, I did giggle a little bit. It's like, well, funny. That's convenient.
Yeah, certainly convenient.
You know, Friday, end of the week.
2 o'clock Central. I mean, every time I've ever held a press conference, it's 2 o'clock Central. Okay. That'd be like throwing a wild neighborhood party on a Tuesday. Hey, Tuesday, a big party. Let me do that Friday or Saturday? Tuesday, 2 o'clock Central. You can move it up, Aaron. So the media icon of America can talk about it. Coming up, Andrew Whitworth, LA Rams.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Andrew Whitworth was rated the number one pass blocking left tackle in the NFL. It was five different players from five different teams. And quite a compliment joining us now via the Coward Global Satellite Network, Andrew Whitworth. All right, so let's start. There's a lot of issues here. Interesting. Andrew, let's start with this. James Harrison, story comes out, 10 years ago, hit a guy, got fined big, and he got an envelope from his head coach, Mike Tomlin. Now, Sean Payton's like, that's a bounty. Give me a break. As a player, when you read that story on Tomlin and James Harrison in the envelope, how does it land for you?
I think being a guy who got hit in the head a lot by James Harrison for a long time, I can first off relate. But you know what? I think for me, I've always been on James's side. Being a guy that competed with him every year, I really felt he got unjustly treated in that whole deal, because really the league changed its stance on all those things. And all of a sudden it became that he was this demon because he was hitting people this way when he had been doing it forever. It was on highlight videos. It was celebrated. It was his biggest hits in the league. And then things changed with concussions. And all of a sudden they kind of used him as the staple to make a point. And so I never took it that I read the story and that Tomlin kind of gave it to him as a promotion or like a, hey, great job doing it. It sounded more like to me that he was saying that Tomlin helped him in some way, like, hey, I'm going to help you pay this fine because it's ridiculous that you got fined for it.
Yeah. So you had respect for Harrison as a player.
Oh, man, I thought he was a tremendous football player and competed a certain way. And not only that, I mean, he knows this. I played with him 1 year in Cincy. He's not a real tall guy in stature. So he was when he would explode and come out of his hips and hit people, a lot of the times receivers, DBs, running backs, he was at head level with those guys, much like a running back is when he lowers his head in a hole.
I've been talking about this. I did not like the story on Cam Newton to Seattle going public. It did not happen. I don't think you should have to coddle a quarterback, but I do think you should support him. And I don't think Cam plays like Russell. And I don't think he fits. He is a celebrity. He's a starter in this league. He's not a backup. And I don't think it works. When you heard the story, and I've always felt Russell's one of the only quarterbacks in the league that's great, and his organization just never puts their arm around him and gives him that support. What did you make of the Cam to Seattle story? Let's start with that.
I thought it was interesting because I agree with you. I don't think they're necessarily the same player. I think Cam's a tremendous football player and definitely could be a starter still in this league, but I don't think those guys are that similar in styles and how they actually play. And Russell's a guy to me that never gets his due and his credit because he's tremendous and all he does is win.
Why doesn't he get the credit? There's got to be an explanation, Andrew.
You know, I think it's interesting. It's almost like we choose different guys across the league, whether we're going to judge them by stats or whether we're going to judge them by wins or Super Bowls, whatever it is. We kind of pick our things to judge guys by. And if it's Breeze, it's always got to be, even though he has won a championship lately, it's really been about stats. And we judge him, his greatness, and he's a great football player. But it's by stats. If it's Brady, it's by championships. And, you know, for whatever reason, Russell Wilson, it's like, hey, all the success he's had, every single year he wins. How he's not in that conversation is one of those guys that's like, man, how is somebody better than him? You know, it always blows you away because regardless of their team and how they're set up and how good they are on any side of the ball, they win.
Let's talk about Tua, number one jersey seller in the NFL for his home jersey. Number two jersey seller is the road Miami uniform. So he's got a special sort of it quality to him, whether it's a Tebow or it's a Baker. You can be polarizing. You can be likable. Whatever it is, Tua's got that. As an offensive lineman, do you block or think differently when Jared Goff was like a rookie to now? If you had a rookie quarterback, does it change the way you block, you think, you go into a game plan, you scheme?
I think it does. The first thing I'd say about that comment is Joe Burrow, welcome to Cincinnati when it comes to jersey sales. And two, I would say as an O-lineman, you know, yes, I think as a young player, you don't necessarily change, you know, how I'm going to block. I don't change what I'm going to do. But I am conscious that probably different things like in college football, the depth they can get in the pocket, how much they can kind of sink back and run away from defenders in the pocket and get away with it, just doesn't happen in NFL football. If you get past 9-10 yards, you're getting your head taken off in NFL football. These guys are too athletic. They're too fast. They're too powerful. And you've got to give your O-lineman an opportunity to really have somewhere to push guys around the pocket if it's not going to be a bull rush and they're going to be pushing up the middle, they're going to be running around the edges. And you're going to have to find your way to finagle yourself in that pocket. You see Russell Wilson, you see Drew Brees, all these guys, they do such a great job. Russell does it by movement. A guy like Drew Brees does it by continuing to stay so shallow in the pocket and really giving his tackles the opportunity to push guys around. Tom Brady's always been tremendous at it. You know, that's the things those guys are going to have to learn, and it's going to make the biggest difference for them the quicker they learn that that pocket and where they're standing and how they protect their linemen by what, the way they do it is going to be the most important thing they learn, because it's going to give them time to get the football out of their hand.
Story came out a week ago from a longtime NFL veteran reporter that Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels' relationship deteriorated, one of the reasons Tom left. In your opinion, can a player struggle in a relationship with a coach and still win?
I mean, I think inevitably in any business in the world, anything you do, everybody doesn't always get along. And I think that being grown men, I think maybe if you're talking about a young quarterback, a guy who just got in and he doesn't like his coaches, or he doesn't, you know, really feel like he vibes with that coach, I think that can be something that's, you know, effective on that player, and it could affect him emotionally and maybe how he prepares. But a veteran quarterback, regardless of whether the story is accurate or not, I mean, I don't see how it would affect him, because as long as he believes in really the philosophy of the offense and how they're going to do things week in and week out to attack teams, it doesn't really matter to him that much about that relationship, as much as there's a respect level there that we can work together, we can go out and try and attack and execute. Now, if you ever get past respect, or you get past, hey, you know what, a guy like Tom or something didn't believe in the philosophy, that's a whole other issue. But I think if he believes in the philosophy and the way we're going to attack teams, I think it really isn't going to have a lot to do with success.
Finally, Rams have new uniforms. I like them. Joy likes them. They're bright. What does a big offensive lineman think about them?
Well, they're bright. And, you know, as an old lineman, Colin, I'm really not worried about how good they look. I'm worried about how bad I might look in them, you know. So we're more worried about, you know, things like, you know, how bad we're going to look in that, you know, bone and how much fat rolls we're going to have in them. So, you know, that's the things we worry about. But, no, I think it all looks good. I really actually like the bone uniform, and I love the home, too. And we got a chance yesterday as some of the veterans to kind of talk about what we want to wear and when and that kind of stuff. So it was fun, man. We're excited about it. A new look, a refreshing look, and it's, you know what, we're excited for the opportunity to hopefully get a chance to put them on soon.
Andrew Whitworth, good talking to you on Friday, buddy. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you.